So, when do I stop? Anybody know?
20 minutes.
Oh, 20 minutes. Okay, wow. It's going to be a race then. Oh, Renee, I'm so glad you're here with mental health issues. Just, I certainly had a few of those, and Rhonda preceded me at Camarillo State Hospital by a few months. I came after her, so of course she had a romance going on and had to leave, I guess. I love Rhonda Daily. I'm telling you, I met her not back in 1988, and I fell in love with her immediately. She's my kind of girl, and you know what? Alcoholics Anonymous is my kind of people. They took me in when nobody else wanted me at all. You know, that everybody had shut down toward the end. They couldn't put up with me anymore. My father was a chemist. He was a graduate of Harvard and MIT. He was a gentleman. He was a fabulous man, you know, and I just drove him to the point that I'll never forget. That morning at 3:30 in the morning, with tears in his eyes, he said, "Son, you have to leave, and you have to." I was, by the way, I was 30, 33, 30, no, let's see, 31 years old then. So he says, "You have to leave, and you have to leave this morning." He said, "We can't watch this anymore. We can't do it. It's like watching somebody die right in front of us." You know, my family loved me. All of my family loved me. My sister loved me. When I made amends, you know, this is the great thing about Alcoholics Anonymous. You get to go back through your life and make all of these things right if you possibly can, you know. And when I was making amends to my sister, she has the bluest eyes on the planet. She was sitting there with tears streaming down her face, and she says, "Bo," that's my family name. She said, "I wanted," she said, "I have loved you all my life. I wanted to marry somebody like you." And she said, "I wanted to come and see you toward the end of our drinking, but I was afraid to come. I was afraid I might find you dead." You know, so I know loneliness as only the alcoholic knows. You know, people just left me alone toward the end, and the end was cataclysmic. I mean, come on, you know, I'd been drinking for 3 weeks toward the end there. And I quit doing anything really complicated, you know, like bathing and changing clothes and shaving. And I quit all of that, you know, because we wore really tight bell bottom trousers in those days. And getting in and out of those when you're drunk, I mean, forget it, you know, you'll break your neck, you know. And those tub shower enclosures. Oh no. I was so black and blue and cut up from those damn things, you know, and so I just quit. And so I had been drinking for about 3 weeks, and I have this wild afro under here. It doesn't look like it now, but me and Angela Davis, I mean, we were in competition there in the 60s. You young people don't know who she is, but Angela Davis was a member of the Black Panther Party in San Francisco. And she. You know, I was in the 60s, but I don't remember them. And they say if you remember the 60s, you were not in them. So we were real busy in those days. And anyway, I'd been drinking for about 3 weeks, and I'd given up on everything. You know what? Here's the truth. I didn't know there was any solution. I didn't know about Alcoholics Anonymous. I didn't know you were out there. It could show me a way out of this hole that I was in. I knew I was circling the drain, you know, just going down here. And every time I say circling the drain, it reminds me of my sponsor, Clint Hodges. I've been going to the Pacific Group for 48 and a half years now. And when I lived in Redondo Beach and got sober in Torrance, so I could only come on Tuesday night. Well, that's when Wednesday night used to be on Tuesday night at Ohio Street, you know. And anyway, I met my sponsor there, and he took me through these steps and changed my life. And I'll be eternally grateful to Clint Hodges and his generosity, you know. His generosity all the way to the very end, by the way. We spent a week in that house when he was dying, and everybody had a moment with Clint. And I had my moment with him on the last day, and he could barely speak above a whisper, and he called me over to the bed, and he says, "Remember Rumi?" And I said, "Rumi? the poet? And he said, yeah. He says, you know, when he laid down in the grass, and he says, I'll meet you there. And I said, yes, I know that poem. And he said, I'll meet you there. Jesus Christ, if you knew how encouraging that was for me to know that, that somebody would come for me. I'm 82 years old now, you know. I'm on the other end here, you guys. And I've had the richest life I could possibly. Rose Kennedy said the most marvelous thing. She said, for to whomsoever much is given, of him shall be much required. And that's us. We're given a great deal. So we have to keep putting back in the pot constantly, over and over and over. We can never pay back this gift that was given to us at the foundation of the universe. You know, we've looked for it all our lives, and who knew it was going to be here behind a gray door or a green floor or a linoleum, whatever, you know. But it's here, and it's not in where I thought it was going to be. I thought it was going to be in St. Patrick's Cathedral in Manhattan, you know, big, giant churches and places like that. No, it was here, you know. I don't know if you've never, I can't, you know, see how I am. I just go all over the place, and here I am trying to tell you my story. Anyway, I was standing on my porch there the last 3 weeks, and I'd been drinking, and I was drunk. I was coming in and out of blackouts is what was going on. And I'm standing there in my doorway, and I'm looking across the courtyard, and I saw them bringing a body down the staircase across from me with a red blanket on it. And I remember thinking, that's what's going to happen to me. That's the best I can hope for, you know. And then, boom, it's like a curtain fell, you know. And then I'm scratching around looking for my bottle. People had been coming in my house. They had stolen everything that wasn't nailed down on the ground floor. And I had records, but nothing to play them on, you know. No TV anymore, you know. Just I lived in a 10-foot circle on the corner of my sofa there, you know, in about a 10-foot circle of trash. And my coffee table was piled up with really interesting things, like all my ambulance bills wrapped up in rubber bands, you know, old phone bills. I had no bank account anymore. The bank called me one day when I still had a phone and said, stop writing checks. You don't have an account here anymore, you know. So that's where I was. And that's where I was. And anyway, I'm looking around for my bottle. I started drinking Tokay wine. You know the wonderful thing? I got to talk in Lodi, California one time at a convention. Lodi is the Tokay capital of the world. Isn't that great? So I started drinking Tokay, and I ended drinking Tokay. And I couldn't find my bottle, so I thought, oh, well. I went up to, they say alcoholics have no willpower. I got to tell you something. People that look like we do, smell like we do, come on, 3 weeks, no bath, no nothing. You know, and that ratty hair of mine, you know. We got a lot of willpower to get out on the street and get another goddamn drink, however we get it, you know. So that's bull, if you want to know the truth. You know, we're victims of an illness, a terrible, terrible illness that will kill us, by the way. If you're new on this page, I want to tell you something. If you're alcoholic, this disease will kill you. If you don't find a solution here, there's no way out for us. That is the end result of the alcoholic. You know, we either go crazy or we die, you know, from it. I in the 48 and a half years, I cannot tell you how many stupendous, loving, wonderful people I have seen die from this disease. It will kill you. The first sponsee I ever had, Benny Wells, had 10 months when he went out, and he couldn't get back, you know. And the police called me one morning, because he'd put a shotgun in his mouth and pulled the trigger. And my name was all over his apartment, you know. And so it was proved to me right from the beginning that when I had to talk to his wife and his little boy, I had to talk to his dad in Virginia, you know, and tell him that the bullet's not what killed your boy. alcoholism is what killed your kid, you know, and I have seen it. I cannot tell you how many times over the years that I've been sober. So if you're new, I want you to grab a hold of this thing. This is the finest group in the world. I want you to know that. These people will reach out to you. They will help you. They will come. They will show up. You know, they will give to you freely what had been given to them. That has been my experience over all of the years. There's not a person on this page that wouldn't do that, you know. So anyway, I couldn't find my bottle. You see how I am? So anyway, I couldn't find my bottle. And I'm a crybaby too, and I can't help it because Alcoholics Anonymous opened me up. You know, my second sponsor, Donald Madden, said that alcoholics are the hardest cocoons to crack, you know, but once you crack me open, and they cracked me open that first day in Alcoholics Anonymous, cracked me wide open. So anyway, I got out on the street and I went up to Thrifty Drugstore to steal me another bottle of wine, and I stole me a couple of bottles of cologne too. It was Trouble. It's by Menon. You can Google it. They did make it. They don't make it anymore, but I thought it was very significant. Like, here comes Trouble, you know. So anyway, I got into Thrifty's, and this is the amazing thing. Every place I never got arrested for shoplifting. And I looked like I was going to shoplift, okay? So I got in there, I got my bottle, I got my cologne, and the next thing I remember, I was outside in the phone booth. And I heard a voice. It was a doctor down in Long Beach, California, that I knew, a psychiatrist, and he was saying, "I cannot help you." And I went in a blackout and came out the other side, and the voice said, "Stay right where you are, and we'll be down to get you." That was Alcoholics Anonymous. There's the finger of God. I don't remember call. I didn't know anything about you, you know? And yet, they said, "Stay right where you are. We'll be down to get you." And I had to tell, I must have told them where I lived, because I went home. I was sitting there on the corner of my sofa with my bottle. And these three guys walked in my living room. You know, if you stay sober long enough, everybody that you love dies. All these three guys that came to get me are dead now. You know, one of them died just a couple of months ago. And you know, the wonderful thing, let me tell you about this power. If you ever get that whisper in your ear, pay attention. Do what it says to do. You know, most of the time it's going to be right. You know, and this whisper came to me and said, "Call Ron Hurwitz today." And I got on the phone and I called it. We talked for about an hour and a half, and he died 2 weeks later. And I cannot tell you how rich I felt as a result of that. You know, he just died a normal death. You know, like I said, I'm 82. I'm on the other end as well. So anyway, I'm sitting there on my sofa, and Ron walks right up to me and says, "We've been right where you are." Oh, my God, that made me so mad. I just wanted to see. I leaped up. I said, "You have never been where I am." And and there was another guy. We called him Big Bob. You know, everybody gets a handle here. We called him Big Bob. He was 6'8" and had his hand. He could pick up a basketball like I would a baseball, you know. His first job when he got sober was at Car Hop. Oh, God. I mean, you can't make this step up, folks. So he says to me, "What are all those scraps of paper there on that coffee table?" That made me mad, too. That was my office, goddammit, you know. It had my stuff on it. It had tons of little pieces of paper with formulas on it. I said, "These scraps of paper you're referring to are formulas that Albert Einstein wanted to release to the universe. But he died before he was able to, and I'm the channel he's writing them through. That's what these little scraps of paper are. And by the way, he's my grandfather," you know, which which he is not. I got a great picture of him Clint gave me over here on my wall. I got Albert all over my house. I loved Albert Einstein. I identified with him for some reason. So all these little papers had all about velocity and time and space-time continuum and time travel and so on and so forth, you know. And so then there was another guy there with him. And he said, "Are you going to go with us?" "Thanks, Julie." And I said, I didn't know who us was. And I didn't know where we were going. And I said, yes, I'm going to go with you. And I went, got up and went in the kitchen. And I poured myself a glass of that Tokay wine. But I didn't drink it right then. And here's the finger of God again, okay? Because I always drink what I poured out. They told me 3 days later, if you had drunk that right then and there, we would have left you. And you know what? I can't afford to be left out there. I don't know how to do this without you. You guys have given me everything that's decent in my life over all these years. So anyway, I went upstairs and got one of my disguises. I would stand around on the street corner at 11:30 at night wearing a black fedora, black overcoat, black turtleneck sweater, black pants, black boots, and black sunglasses at night that you couldn't possibly see through. It's so obvious to me today how I got arrested all the time. I thought I was invisible. I think they should print that on an alcohol label. Caution, drinking this beverage may make you think you are invisible. You know, so anyway, I came downstairs with my yellow Bermudas lavender tank top and my hexagonal shaped sunglasses that you couldn't possibly see through, and and I grabbed that glass of wine and out the door I went with these people into the night, you know. And I came to the next morning and I heard these voices and I didn't know where it was. Somebody else's house, somebody else's pajamas, you know. Followed the voices out to the kitchen and there they were. There were these alcoholics sitting around talking this magic language. And the reason I call it the magic language is because I could hear them. I could hear them. See, I couldn't hear the minister. I couldn't hear the psychiatrist and the psychologist, the therapist, my family, people begging me on bended knee, please. You know, I couldn't hear all these people. And I sat down at this, at the kitchen table there, and one of them says to me, "You know, it's the first drink that gets you drunk." And I said, "What?" Because I didn't know that. I always thought I shouldn't have had the last one. They said, "No, no, no. If you're like us, it's that first drink that sets up something in us that it does not in other people. That phenomenon of craving takes over. We can no longer predict with any accuracy whether we're going to wind up or down. We don't know what's going to happen from that moment on, you know." And I'm sitting there, and I was shaking so bad I couldn't stand it. And first I thought I was back in the nut house. They were taking pills and drinking protein drinks and all that, you know. And this guy was a vitamin salesman, so they were all eating vitamins, you know. Anyway, my friend Shirley was there that morning, and Shirley said the most astounding thing. She said, "One drink's too many, 1,000's not enough." And I blew up. I started to cry. And I was shaking so hard. And the reason I was crying is I thought, oh, my God, these people are like me. See, I didn't know that, you know. And they took me under their wing. And they freely gave to me what had been given to them. And believe me when I tell you, I have a very rich life today. I'm not talking about money. I'm talking about peace, serenity, hope. I didn't have any hope at all left in me until that morning when Shirley said, "One drink's too many and 1,000's not enough," and I just exploded that morning, you know. So that started my journey, you know, and I loved journey. Journey is a French word, journée. It means a day's trip, and that's all we're doing here. They asked me that morning, "Can you not drink for one day?" And I said, "Any fool cannot drink for one day." And they said, "Well, that's how we do it. We're just doing this thing one day at a time." So they said, "You come along and go with us, and you never have to drink again, one day at a time." They made it so attractive to me. They made me feel so safe and secure. I would follow these people to the ends of the earth. And you know what? I'll do that today. I come to you when my heart's broken. I come to you when I'm so happy I can't stand it. You have seen me in every single phase of my life. You saw me get married. I've been married 45 years. Give me a break. You guys, it's not impossible. Not possible. You know? Anyway, I'll tell you, my life is rich. I wish I had more time. And as I said to you in the very beginning, I could talk forever. So I want to say this, though. I love all you people on here. There's so many old friends here that I have known throughout the years, you know. I am so glad that you're still in here. That's one message that I give the guys I sponsor, you know. I hope you're in this for the long run, see, because more and more is revealed as time goes on, you know. And if you're not in it for the long run, you'll miss out. You won't be there when that thing, that key, whatever it is that turns that thing in you, turns you on, you know. So anyway, thank you, Rhonda, my dear, darling Rhonda that I love so much. Thank you so much for inviting me this morning. It's been a real, real treat.